Someone on your side. The title of what I hope to say to you today, it's based on Romans, the 8th chapter, the 28th verse, which you can probably say in your sleep, if not in your memory. We know that all things work together for good for those who love God, those who are called according to His purpose. We know that all things work together for good. Or do we? Across the years of my life, particularly my adult life, as I discovered and tried to live as Jesus' disciple, I came face to face, time after time, with obstacles and barriers to achieving that end. And along the way to that end, the goals and objectives that I had before me, the responsibilities that I had accepted, just when I thought things were going well, something would happen. Something would stop me in my tracks. I was going to refer to taking a hike in the woods, but I passed so many joggers and bicyclists on my way here today that I think that would be just as good an illustration if you had to pass them too. Especially if you've gone someplace you've never been before and you're doing one of these things, and you don't have a GPS going or a map in your pocket, just when you really think you have your stride, you run into a river with no bridge in sight, too deep to wade across, and God hadn't sent the pillar of light or the pillar of cloud, so He wasn't about to part the waters. What is a person to do? After all, we're just trying to live the good life. We're just trying to be the people God made us to be. And when we're putting our whole effort into it, just around the bend is a barrier, an obstacle, something to stop us dead in our tracks. And we stop and look at that barrier. We examine that obstacle. We estimate the distance from the shore that we're on to the shore on the opposite side. And we think, there's no way to get across. It's not fair. I'm just trying to be the good person God made me to be. What is a person to do? Well, I have found, and I'm big with images, mental pictures for myself, because that helps me understand everything that I have to deal with. It's complicated. That's where the image of the wide river came in. And over the years, I have found that when I step out in faith onto that river, not that I can walk on water, but like the old joke we told as teenagers, you can get across if you know where the stones are. You didn't tell that story. You didn't tell that joke. Okay, that must be an Essex County joke. Yes, the punchline is, for the person who got across while the others sank, when they got to the other side, they looked at each other, the two that made it across, and said, I guess we should have told the third guy where the stones were. The stones, the stepping stones for me, are Bible verses and Bible stories that have come to me as I've studied, often in retrospect, but sometimes before, depending on how God is working with me at the time. And it's the inspiration and the encouragement of those verses and those stories that allow me to take the next step, and then the next, and then the next, until I am past the obstacle, until the trouble is behind me. Now, as we look at Romans, there are quite a few possible potential stepping stones for us to claim, for us to remember, for us to embroider and frame and put on the wall, or for us to go to the Christian bookstore and look for a poster that illustrates it, or just for us to commit the verse to memory. Back in the 50s when I was growing up, we did a lot of that Bible memorization, which in the 60s somebody decided wasn't healthy for us, because those who couldn't do it felt defeated, and then they stopped paying attention. Well, we do have to make accommodations for everybody, because the gospel is for everybody. But actually, I memorized most of the Bible verses that are in my memory today as a result of discovering it in Bible study or in a sermon or in a class as a stepping stone. It became that which I could stand on and take the next step from. So, this book Paul wrote to Romans is his credo, his I believe statement. When we come up to the affirmation of faith today, it's going to be totally unfamiliar to you, not because I was trying to put an obstacle in your path, but because we're within a couple of weeks of my ordination anniversary, this being the 40th that's coming up on August 11th. But back in 1999, when I was a young man, I was on my 25th anniversary, and I got the idea it was time to sit down and write out my own words for what it is I believe. And then, because I'm long-winded, to condense them into something that was actually usable in a worship service rather than 20 pages. So when we get there, again, I ask you to bear with me. You're doing this to help me celebrate my anniversary, but hopefully also to stir your faith. So here we have Paul writing this incredible theological tome called The Letter to the Romans, so that he can introduce himself to people he has never met before and with whom he had no part in teaching the faith to. Indeed, he hadn't been to Rome ever yet in his life, though he was a Roman citizen. Scholars believe that he was planning to go to Rome voluntarily, not under arrest yet, because he was really feeling called to do missionary work in Spain. And he needed a resting place, and he probably needed to raise some support. So, rather than him having to introduce himself face to face with each stranger, he decided to write this letter which they could circulate and all get the idea of what it is he believed, who he was about, what his faith had taught him, and what faith he claimed as he would teach and lead the people of God in Spain or anywhere. So just starting out with the reading that we had today, there's the 18th verse. I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worth comparing with the glory about to be revealed to us. We do like to do that comparison. How else can we say, woe is me? Things are bad. The next one is 26. Romans 8:26. Likewise, the Spirit helps us in our weakness, for we do not know how to pray as we ought, but that very Spirit intercedes on our behalf, prays for us, with sighs too deep for words, too profound for human speech. I find great comfort when I come into my personal prayer closet to talk to God about what's going on in my life, especially the real stuff, the difficult stuff, and the stuff that people I love or know or care about are going through, which is also deep. And I often, hands folded, eyes shut, struggle to find words to express what it is I'm feeling, what it is I want to say to God about what the need is, what the concern is. And I have drawn comfort in those frustrating times, knowing from this verse that the Holy Spirit prays in a language of sound and emotion that exceeds my ability to choose and speak human words. And that impresses God. That affects God. So, again, another stepping stone for me. And then, of course, our verse for today, Romans 8:28. We know that all things work together for good for those who love God, who are called according to His purpose. This is the New Revised Standard Translation, which I assumed we were using here. It's not the verse. It's not the translation I memorized it in, and it may not be the translation you memorized it in if you did indeed memorize it. But it's a very famous verse. We know that in all things God works together for the good of those who love Him, those whom He calls according to His purpose. All things. It's an absolute. It doesn't mean this one and that one, but not the other one. God works together for the good in all things for those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. No exceptions. It isn't easy, of course, having faith in that verse. Putting trust in when things are going south. And I don't mean Florida. When things are not going well. It's hard to think that God is going to make anything out of this. I don't know who said it before him, but I know that Robert Schuller certainly made the line famous when he said over and over again and wrote in several of his books, when life gives you lemons. Exactly. Isn't that cute? I have problems with acid, citric acid. That does not speak to my heart at all. But this verse does. All things, God makes good out of it. Not that day, probably. Not the next day, likely. Or the next week. Sometimes it goes for months and even years. But as one who claims this verse, I can tell you that sooner or later, when God has manipulated all the pieces of the puzzle together to make good, it comes to be. It comes to pass. So it is only in the rearview mirror of life, it is only in our hindsight, when we connect our history with our faith, that we recognize that was God straightening out that mess, solving that problem. Profound and deep stuff. Because the human reaction, the knee-jerk reflex reaction to something bad happening to you is that you've done something wrong. Unless it is you're playing the blame game and you're saying somebody else did something wrong. But typically, for the sincere heart, we recognize without a great deal of effort that maybe this is payback for this which we failed to do or that which we did knowing it was wrong, but delighting in it anyway. And we find ourselves justly punished. Deservedly in trouble. This is certainly what was going on with the Israelites when they lost that famous battle and were carried off into captivity in Babylon while the Babylonians destroyed Jerusalem, laid waste to it, just a pile of rubble and rock where there had been beautiful buildings. And now they have left everything they've known. They've left the fields they took care of. They left the shops they maintained. They left their way of life behind them. Now they were servants. No, slaves. Serving people who spoke a language they didn't understand, who had customs that they felt were unclean, and who treated them harshly. Of course they thought they had been bad. Because they had been. And so, over the ensuing years, they would just bemoan and bemoan the fact that this was the end of life. This is the way it was going to be forever, because they only got what was coming to them. God didn't love them anymore. So God gives this word to Jeremiah. I'll bet you've memorized this verse, Jeremiah 29:11. Anybody remember that? It's not a test. Jeremiah spoke for God, saying, and implying, first off, this would be a parenthetical phrase, you think you know what God's doing in this? You don't know what God's doing in this. Close parentheses. I know the plans I have for you. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope. Plans to give you a great future. Doesn't that lift you up when you realize God is on your side? His plan is not to punish you. It's not the timeout chair. It's not sending you to your room. It's not taking away something that you love or keeping you from doing an activity which you enjoy. I know, God says, the plans I have for you. You're wrong. I'm not trying to beat you up. I'm not trying to make you suffer. I want you to be happy. And I've got better plans for you than you've come up with for yourselves. And in 70 years, I'm going to bring you back to Jerusalem, and you're going to have your homes again and your life again. And your children will know their God and their customs. That's a great stepping stone. If you haven't memorized that one, that's a good one worth doing. And we like stories like that, don't we? We like stories that vindicate people who have been overpowered by some injustice or some wrong or some misfortune in their lives. Wasn't that bad, was it? Thank you for those of you who are smiling. We tend to go there in our minds. We tend to think that about the bad turns that we make in life. But we love it when somebody comes to the rescue. God rescued his people out of Egypt when they were in slavery there. God rescued his people from Babylon when they were in slavery there. God is in the rescue business because those he loves, he wants to have a better life. And he wants to have their life with him. It is nice to have someone fight your battles for you. You know, the my father is bigger than your father business. Well, it's nothing like having a big brother if you don't have a father who's bigger than the other guy's father. Or a sister. I was once knocked a little silly with a snowball walking home from school with my sister, who's younger than I am. And it left me dizzy and disoriented a little bit. Well, she turned around and went after those two boys like a tiger. And they ran, because she meant business. So it's really okay to have a little sister, too, when she can be that way. But when we are facing an overwhelming power, a tyrant, we want a giant to come along and rescue us. We're thinking only a giant will do. And what we're not looking for and what we're not expecting is some shepherd boy teenager with a slingshot to take down the giant. I'm talking about David. Maybe that's why many big newspapers and TV news departments have a reporter or two on their staff who regularly do a piece on the evening news or in the paper, taking up a viewer's cause against the city or against a major corporation or against something else that's bigger than the individual, something that has them feeling powerless. Like 7 on your side, if you're a Channel 7 watcher. Okay? Sarah Wallace and Jim Hoffer get the letters of the desperate who, when they have tried everything else and feel there's nobody else to turn to, nobody on their side. Maybe one of these two characters can help them out. And when they do, it makes the story. And we cheer inside. Like with us, the abused person getting beaten up by the big person can't imagine what to do to fight off this stronger power. The opponent is too big, we think. The opponent has too many resources because we count them all up. This is why I can't win, because of this, 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 and this. Only when our battle is won do we get it in our heads that it is winnable. I once pastored a 90-member congregation trying to build a new building on a new campus. We organized and a committee, like everybody, and being Presbyterian, you have to have a committee. And we dreamed up this great plan that was going to serve all the needs of all the age groups and all the program groups, and was going to have beautiful sacred space that would be moving just to sit there. And we put it out for bids. And the bids came back higher than our ceiling. And we thought, oh, we can't have the church of our dreams. So we kind of wandered around in circles, stunned for a while. Then the committee got back together and said, okay, we can pare this down. We can come up with another design. We can still do the space that we want for all these groups. It just has to be multi-purpose space, more multi-purpose space, not single-purpose space. And so we spent months designing that building. I forget how many blueprints our architects printed for us, but every week that we met, there was another raft of them, another pad of them. Until finally we thought we had it, and we showed it to the congregation, and they got excited. And off we went and put it out to bid for the second design. But it was a hexagon, and builders get nervous when there are angles that are not right angles. It involves engineering and it involves different kinds of support. And so what it boiled down to is it was too expensive. So we were down for the count with round two. And then we thought about something more creative. And we discovered this building system of pre-stressed panels. It's basically a sheet of plywood, polyurethane, and a sheet of sheetrock. And it distributed the weight, didn't involve all these studs. You just put them together like Lincoln Logs. Great idea! This guy came to us. He showed us pictures of buildings he'd built. He showed us how we could do different designs. He really had us all going, and he said, you know, to get started, we need $5,000, and we'll do this preliminary plan with you. We'll convert what you already have into this system. Well, $5,000, and 2 months later, he was arrested in the state of North Carolina for never having gone to engineering school, never having a degree, and never having a license to do such things. And a church that he had built and was almost completed had to be bulldozed because it was unsafe to go inside. The walls could not support the weight of the roof. A church on the other side of town who had introduced us to this guy was out $25,000. So on the one hand, we didn't get off so bad. But on the other hand, we didn't have $5,000 to throw away. To shorten the story, we finally got to build a building that does all those things, except for the sanctuary, the sacred space. It is all multi-purpose. It's really pretty, yet it's really simple. And today, if you drive down Hope Road after you get off the parkway at exit 105, there is Hope Presbyterian Church of Tinton Falls, sitting in the woods like Johnsonburg. Beautiful setting, beautiful building. And as we're getting ready to build, we go to our banks and they ask us questions we can't answer. How much money can you guarantee the congregation is going to contribute towards the payment of this mortgage over 25 years? 90 people? No doctors, no lawyers, no Indian chiefs? They never should have granted us that mortgage. And the presbytery, who, if you default on your mortgage, has to pay it for you, the presbytery should never have approved it. They knew we couldn't afford it. And they did. And there it stands today. It's a testimony. God works all things for the good. The right architect, the right design, the right time, the right everything. God brought all this together to make this good happen. 9 years after we started the process. But it wasn't 40. You remember the Israelites trying to find the promised land for 40 years. It wasn't 40, it was only 9. But while we were going through it, I was tested. Satan was at work because he made me feel like a failure as a pastor and a leader, much less a church builder. I'd never even taken a course in church building. I was sure with each continual defeat, I was leading these people to despair. And then it all came together. God worked it all for the good. And in the course of doing that, this verse, Romans 8:28, and we know that in all things God works together for the good of those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. And I have quoted that and taught that for many years, but never about something so important as this building had become to this congregation. And just before we broke ground, I discovered this song. Do you guys like to sing at all? Was that a yes or a no? I couldn't. I have a hearing loss. Where'd you go, Tom? Tom went to 7-Eleven. No. Would you pass those around? There may be enough for everybody, otherwise we'll have to share. Tatiana.
Yeah.
Is stepping way outside her comfort zone because this is not organized at all. And she likes to have everything together so she can shine. And I appreciate your professionalism. Let's just give me the first note of the melody line of the chorus. Yes, that's it. That's all I need. Let me sing this for you. You can pick it up really fast. He didn't bring us this far to leave us. He didn't teach us to swim to let us drown. He didn't build His home in us to move away. He didn't lift us up to let us down. Isn't that simple? Now, I didn't sing the note you gave us, so try again, or I'll get in trouble with the verses. Join me, please. He didn't bring us this far to leave us. He didn't teach us to swim to let us drown. He didn't build His home in us to move away. He didn't lift us up to let us down. One more time. Actually, it's going to be more than one more time. But you will gain a little confidence. And if you gain confidence, I may risk singing the verses for you, which I will not try to teach you. But they're there on the paper. Together. He didn't bring us this far to leave us. He didn't teach us to swim to let us drown. He didn't build His home in us to move away. He didn't lift us up to let us down. There are some promises in a letter written a long, long long time ago. They're not getting older, they're getting better. Because He still wants us to know. You ready? He didn't bring us this far to leave us. He didn't teach us to swim to let us drown. He didn't build His home in us to move away. He didn't lift us up to let us down. There's not enough time to keep beating this, but when I preach, I try to have a take-home. I try to have an idea or some illustration is going to stick with you so you can remember and benefit over a period of time from having sat through my sermon. And not everybody is good with memory stimulation from words alone. I happen to get even more out of things when they're put to music. This little verse haunted me for years, and I sang it to myself for years, long before I ever saw it in with music, you know, with the notes. In fact, this was done for me by my former director of music just the other night, because I had never seen it written out. So, He didn't bring us this far to leave us. Wherever you are, whatever obstacle you're facing, whatever river is around the bend, we have someone. And that is not a typographical error. You know, sometimes they turn a letter around like an E when they're advertising, they're using a word in advertising, so your mind grabs it because it says that's wrong. Okay, so the little S in someone is there on purpose, besides one, capital O, is for God. So there's sort of a little license I'm taking with the English language. Those of you English teachers and librarians, I need a special measure of forgiveness from you for that. But we have someone on our side. Better than seven on our side. We have God on our side. And He's going to make everything good for those who love Him and are called according to His purpose. Thanks for having me here today. It's been a delight to meet new cousins in the family of faith. I don't believe I've ever met any of you before. And who knows when or if we'll see each other again, except when we cross the threshold between this life and eternal life. I'll be at the gate waiting for you, along with a bunch of people you know a whole lot better. Amen.